3, hit it.
Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is why worry? And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving and not worrying and living a life of meaning and joy and pretty much anything that's going to make your life better are 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, it's 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can dial 001-760-918-4300. So pretty much anywhere in the world is going to be 001-760-918-4300. And as always, before we go to the phones, I'm going to set the table and I'm going to talk a little bit about worry. And I've talked about worry before. And I thought it was about time I talked about it again because people are still doing it. It's almost like I haven't gotten through to the entire planet yet. And some of what I say, if you're a regular listener to the show, some of what I say is going to be familiar to you. But maybe some of what I say is going to be a little bit different, and maybe you're going to hear it a little bit differently today. Because one of the things that's become very evident to me in the last, maybe month and a half, and it's not something brand new, but it's something that's become more apparent, is that the human mind works really well as a binary sorting mechanism. And what I mean by that is we know when we know, and we don't know when we don't know. And you can live with a remarkable clarity of mind knowing when you know, knowing that you don't know when you don't know, but knowing that you will know when you need to know. And we could call that third piece. So the first bit is the binary bit. You either know what to do or you don't. Worrying about it, thinking about it, trying to figure it out isn't really going to do much except agitate your mind. And when your mind gets agitated, it gets clouded over. It gets clogged up. It gets filled with, as my colleague George Pransky said today, it gets filled with pettifoggery. And it becomes really difficult to see your own knowing. It becomes really difficult to hear the still small voice within. It gets really problematic to sift through the noise of your day-to-day thinking and hear your own wisdom come through, your deeper wisdom, to hear the intelligence behind life, which really does a great job of spinning the planet and growing plants and breathing humans and even thinking human minds if we let it. When we're caught up in our thinking trying to figure stuff out, there's less space for that. So instead of it being simple, well, look, I know. Oh, I don't know. I know what to say. I don't know what to say. Isn't it a problem if you don't know what to say? No, because I'll know when I know. Because that intelligence will provide it for me. I'll know when there's something to know. I often share the story, and it's one of my favorite stories, again, of George Pransky of the pettifoggery fame, that he had an intern with him on a mediation. And he went into the mediation. It was a big corporate mediation, and it was pretty nasty. The two sides were very far apart. And the first session went terribly. So normally the first session was really just to create rapport and get to know the patterns and kind of lay out the guidelines and their working methodology. And just nobody cared. Nobody wanted to listen. And they came out of that session. They actually called it early. Said, let's take a break. And they came out and the intern said to George, well, that was awful. And George said, I know. And the intern said, well, what are you going to do? And George said, I don't know. And the intern said, well, what do you mean you don't know? Well, I don't know. But you know, well, we're taking a 20-minute break. I'll probably know by the time we get back. See, he had a kind of a faith in how the mind works. He had an understanding that when we don't fill up our mind with lots of worry and figuring outness and trying to sort through and what would Jesus do? What would Frank do? What would Frank works in accounting, in case you don't know Frank. You know, what would this person do? You just leave that space open and the deeper intelligence comes into it. Well, towards the end of the time, the intern came up to him again and said, well, have you figured it out? Andrew said, no. Well, what are you going to do? And George Sternovan said, hey, what do you want me to do? Make something up? See, George had sufficient faith in the deeper mind, in this intelligence inside us, that it really didn't look like a good idea to stir his mind up with lots of worry or figuring out, which would actually block the space for a new idea to come through. It would be like if you were at a bus stop and you're at a bus stop waiting for a bus and you know the bus always comes. It always comes to that bus stop. You don't know exactly when, but it's an official bus stop and buses run. And somebody else comes to the bus stop and goes, I don't think the bus is coming. What are we going to do? What are we going to do if the bus doesn't come? You know what we should go walk and see if we can find a bus. Let's go looking for a bus. And if they convince you to go looking for a bus, of course what happens is you see a bus driving right past you, stopping at the bus stop that you're now too far away from to go to, and driving off without you. And it's kind of like that. If you understand that an open mind, a present moment mind, and I know or I don't know mind, is the bus stop for insight, is the bus stop for good ideas, is the bus stop for fresh thinking, then it just wouldn't occur to you to leave the bus stop to try and find the bus. And it wouldn't occur to you to busy yourself in your head trying to find an insight. Because you know when you know. You don't know when you don't know. But you know that you'll know when you know. So the numbers to call to get into the conversation, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S. and Canada. You can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. And let's begin with Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. I'm looking for some guidance. I'm 39 years old. I recently, very unexpectedly, lost my job due to restructuring.
Mm-hmm.
I did not pursue any post-secondary education when I was younger. And now I'm seeing this as a great opportunity, but really having a difficult time pinning down what it is that I should be doing. And I have two teenagers in the home that will be pursuing post-secondary education soon. So I'm kind of fighting my practical side as to, do I just jump into something right away? Do I go back to school? And so I'm just lacking some focus at this point.
So first question, boys or girls?
Boys.
I've only got one of them. I got two girls, but I got one boy. It's really fun. They have huge adventures. So, okay, second question, more relevant to what you actually called for. It's just curious. What do you mean when you say, I don't know what I should do?
I'm not sure what it is that I want to do exactly.
Okay.
I'm looking to do something different. I've kind of always done the things that I'm good at because maybe that was easy, and that's the opportunities that I found. But what I found as I've gotten older is that really wasn't feeding my soul. I was kind of feeling like this has gotten old, it's boring, it's not exciting me anymore. So although the job loss was unexpected and quite a big shock, it's still something that's kind of exciting, and I'm dealing with the shock, I guess, and looking at it as an opportunity instead. But I'm struggling with where to focus in regards to making the decision as to whether I should go back to school or just look for something else that's available in my area. I'd like to stay in the area that I'm in because we do have roots here.
Okay, so I'm getting a little confused, and let me see what I can clarify here. First off, I'm not convinced that what your soul is hungry for, you're going to find in a job. Because in my experience, what our souls get hungry for is reconnection with us. And that's an inside job, right? That can happen or not happen in a dentist's office or a zoo or a consultancy or on the streets. So I would take that off the list as criteria for what I do next for work.
Okay.
See, and it's a very common thing, but when we think that our fulfillment is going to come from, if only I could find the right fill in blank here. For some people, it's job. For some people, it's salary. For some people, it's partner. For some people, it's religious teaching. For, you know, it's different for each of us. But whenever we think there's something outside of us that's going to bring us home to ourselves, we're looking in the wrong direction because we're always already home.
Okay. I guess I'm feeling quite happy in other areas of my life, but obviously now I have the opportunity to make a decision career-wise.
So I'm gonna, and again, forgive me for being slowing it down, but I'm gonna, and I'm not trying to be the word police, but I want to ask about that. So making a decision is sort of something that sounds very definitive to me. And I don't know, if you don't know what you want to do, I don't know why you would want to make a decision. It's like, I don't actually know if I like any of these guys, but I got to marry one of them. Like, I would be more inclined to date.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like,
it actually does. I mean, I'm looking at taking maybe an introductory course to something rather than jumping in with both feet and looking at full-time education.
See, this is here's why I'm asking these questions, Jennifer, because if it was a case, if you'd gotten on and you'd said, boy, there are three things that I would love to do, and I just don't know which one to do next. I understand that as a decision. But if you're coming on and saying, I don't really know what I want to do, but I got to decide once and for all. That just sounds like a bad plan.
Right. Well, I don't think it's a once and for all decision that I have to make. I guess it's just a next, and maybe not, like you said, a decision, but definitely something, a direction rather
okay
than
so here decision. Here come to an imaginary restaurant with me. Okay, now we're going to come back to this restaurant every day for lunch, and it's got a big menu, so you're not going to get bored. How much energy are you going to put into figuring out what to order on day one?
A lot, because you've got the whole menu to go through.
Okay, sure. But when it comes down to it, when the waitress comes, are you going to keep sending her away, or you're just going to pick one?
Well, you're just going to pick one when she comes. But I would take a lot of time to decide.
So even if you were going to be back there on Tuesday, and back there on Wednesday, and back there on Thursday, and back there on Friday, and back there on Saturday, and back there on Sunday, and back there on Monday, and back there on Tuesday, and you were going to, in fact, eat there every day for the rest of your life, would you really? Try
no.
to get the first
okay,
choice right?
No, yeah, you would pick one because there wasn't any risk that you would get to try the other thing you were interested in tomorrow.
Right. And that's what I hear in your question as your stuckness, is you're acting like you only get to choose once. Even though you're saying, oh, no, it's just the first thing, you're acting like you're only going to get one, maybe two cracks at this. And it's like, yeah, if you're only allowed three dates before you have to get married, you got to be pretty careful about those three dates. But I'm not aware that the world of work works that way.
Okay.
So let me ask you this. If you knew you could try something, and if you didn't like it, you could stop doing it. And if you liked it, you could do more of it. What's on your short list?
Right now, I'm looking at homeopathic nutrition.
Okay. And what would you do with that?
Well, I'd love to have my own business. I'd love to be able to help people and to guide people on their nutritional choices and help them with their health in a totally encompassing manner.
Okay. Anything else? If they serve up homeopathic nutrition and you kind of go, that didn't taste like what I thought it was going to taste like.
Yeah, this isn't what I like. I've considered registered massage therapy, mm-hmm. Business administration.
Okay. And if the waitress came right now and said, honey, just choose one. You're going to come back and choose another one tomorrow. What would you choose today?
I would look at the nutrition.
Okay. See, I'm not convinced it needs to be any more complicated than that. Because my experience of flirting, and admittedly, it's kind of in the distant past. I haven't really flirted much outside my marriage for the last 27 years. But my experience and memory of flirting is that you can tell pretty quickly whether you want to go further when you flirt.
True.
And that's a really good way to decide who to date. And then you go on a few dates, and you can tell after a few dates whether you want to go further or whether you're kind of done.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, obviously, I've never found myself in the position where I actually have the opportunity to think it through.
Right. So okay. See, here's the, you just nailed it, Jennifer. Thinking it through is totally the wrong strategy. Right? If you try and think through who to date, you're going to wind up trying to date a checklist.
Okay. Yeah.
You kind of find somebody who looks kind of nice and you go on a date. You know, there's one of the dating sites is called It's Just Lunch. You know, it's just a job interview. It's just a preliminary course. It's like, you know, try it. See what you think. You see, thinking it through is that myth of worry. Thinking it through is that idea that if I just think about it enough, I'll figure it out. Well, the truth is, you don't know. If you knew, you'd do that. But since you don't know, you're going to do better to be present and try stuff and let that intelligence that you have inside you guide you.
Well, that's excellent advice, and it's a really good analogy as well, because it's interesting when you reframe it, how it makes you realize that the answers are really right in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And believe me, Jennifer, you're so not alone.
No. No, I don't think so. I think it's just it's an odd place to be right now in that I've never had this opportunity. So try not to put too much pressure on myself.
Yeah, you know what I wanted to say as soon as I heard you say I've never had this opportunity, I want to say blow it. Blow it and you'll see that you have another opportunity. Because right now you're not really playing, you're trying not to blow it.
That's right.
So blow it. And then maybe you'll get it right the second time.
Excellent. Okay.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Michael.
You're welcome. Okay. You know, it's, I wasn't kidding when I said, boy, you know, that's, you're not alone, right? We all think for some reason that if we just think about stuff enough, we'll figure it out. And what actually usually happens on those rare occasions where that strategy works, what actually usually happens is we think about it and think about it and think about it. And at some point we get so hacked off with our own thinking. We get so bored of thinking about it that we distract ourselves. We go for a walk. We leave it for a week. We go do something else. We watch TV, we read them, and all of a sudden, we know what to do. And we think, oh, it worked. Well, no, what worked was stopping thinking about it so your mind could open back up so the intelligence could give you the answer. You know, a friend of mine runs a, well, used to run a very large company, and they had engineers and scientists who work at the company, and they began to discover that their best solutions always came after they gave up on trying to solve a problem. And it got to the point where it was a strategy that they employed, where they would actually, if somebody was stuck on something, they would go, well, have you tried giving up? Oh, brilliant. I forgot. And then they'd give up. And sure enough, later that day, the next day, they'd get the answer. And the two things my friend told me were always consistent is it always worked. And they were always surprised. Because it just looks like if it's to be, it's up to me. If I'm going to get the answer, I've got to figure it out in my mind. I've got to worry this problem around in my mind until I come up with the answer. And that's the exact opposite of the truth. When you let it be, when you simply aim yourself in a direction, you aim your mind in a direction, and you let it go, you get out of the way, the answer will come into that space because there's an intelligence behind the mind. I call it the deeper mind. People call it the divine mind, the universal mind, the universal intelligence, the God mind, the deeper nature, our instinct, our intuition, our whatever it is, the GPS for the soul. It's there. It's always been there, and it's always running. And the fact that you're not in the habit of listening to it, it'd be sort of like, I've got a GPS in some cars that I've had. The GPS, when the GPS comes on, it quiets the radio. So, you know, you can be listening to music and then, you know, it'll tell you, you know, it'll turn down, you know, whatever's playing on the radio and boom, there's your directions. And it's great. But I've also had a couple of cars. And I think one of the ones that we've got now, I can't remember which one does this, where it doesn't speak over the radio. It basically, the GPS comes in at the same volume as the radio. So if you have the radio turned down, you can't hear the GPS. And if you have the radio turned up, you can't hear the GPS. It's not brilliantly designed. Well, our minds are a little bit like that. When we keep turning up the volume on the music or talk radio, we keep turning on the talk show in our heads, we can't hear the GPS. It's not that the GPS isn't working. There's nothing wrong with the GPS. We just have the radio up too loud. And if you know that, it stops seeming like such a good idea to keep cranking the radio every time you want to hear the GPS. Because that's actually the exact opposite of how it works. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. I want to let you know about a few things we got going on. You can always find out what we're up to by going to supercoach.com, and you'll find a calendar there, and you'll find the TED Talk, Why Aren't We Awesomer? And you'll find books and tips and all sorts of free stuff and fun stuff. But things coming up. If you are in the UK, I am going to be in Glasgow with the one and only Ali Campbell, who a lot of you know is a Hay House author over there. And Ali and I are going to be doing a two-day workshop in Glasgow called Life Doesn't Have to Be a Struggle. Actually, I'm not really sure if it's called that, but it's something about not struggling. And you can find the links to that on my website or on Ali's website. And that will be on the Saturday, Sunday. Then if you're in London on the Monday, I'm going to be giving a talk at my favorite venue in the UK. It's called Alternatives. It's at St. James Church. And I'll be talking about shifting the foundations. And it's one of the most beautiful venues that I get to speak at each year, and it's also one of the least expensive. So that's a fun way to come along. And if you do, please come up and introduce yourself as a listener. I always like people trying to convince me that I'm not just talking to my computer screen when I do this show. What else do we have going on? If you are in America and you want to come to a weekend, we're going to be doing on the 9th and 10th of October, going to be doing 2 days on going beyond psychology and the promise of the principles, which are the principles I talk about on the show. And you can learn more about that at supercoach.com/Manning. So, why worry? Now, one of the reasons that I phrased it that way is it's a question I'd like you to really consider, because most people actually have an answer to it in their heads. Why worry? Because if I didn't worry, something bad would happen. Why worry? Because if I didn't worry, I'd never do anything. It motivates me. And the number one reason why people have difficulty, in my experience, letting go of their insecure thinking, letting go of their worry, is because at some level they think it's a really good thing to do. At some level, they kind of think there's a value here. You know, if nothing else, it's entertaining. It would be boring not to worry. I remember having a conversation with my sister once, and she just come back from holiday, and the entire description of the holiday was about how they got lost, and then they lost their money, and then somebody stole their camera, and it just sounded awful. And I said, "Why do you guys travel?" And she just looked so surprised and said, "Well, that's the fun of it." We have that kind of relationship sometimes with worry. It's like, well, I don't want peace of mind sounds dull. At least if I worry, I'm entertained. So why do you worry? Do you worry because you can't help it, which is what most people say at first? Or is at least part of your worry for fun? Is at least part of your worry because you think maybe it'll keep me safe? Is at least part of your worry thinking that it's motivating you? Is at least part of your worry thinking, hey, if I don't think this through, if I don't really think about this and think about this and think about this, I'll never get the answer, right? That's another one. That's another answer to why worry. Well, because that's how I figure things out. Because we don't see that actually it's when we stop worrying that the answer comes. It's when we turn the radio down, not up, that we can hear the GPS. You know, there's an old joke, and I like this joke. And a man standing on a street corner, let's put him on a street corner in London, and he's swinging a tiger by its tail. And policeman comes up to him and goes, "Excuse me, sir, why are you swinging that tiger by its tail?" And he says, "To keep away the lions." And the policeman looks around and goes, "But sir, there are no lions." And the man says, "See, it's working." And that's us with worry. When somebody points out to us that there's nothing to worry about, it doesn't stop us from worrying. It's proof in our minds that the worry worked. And then we'll do it again the next time we're scared or insecure or frightened. And one of the misnomers about worry, one of the things that just really throws people, that they just get wrong, is they think that evidence will cure their worry. You know, they think statistics will cure their worry. And every now and again, in fairness, it will. Every now and again, you'll say to somebody, "Hey, you know, there's less than a 0.00001% chance of this happening, and it will get through to them." But most of the time, they'll go, "Yeah, but there's a 0.00001% chance." And I remember I used to always tell a story. It's an old joke. I first heard it in an NLP seminar years ago from Robert Diltz. And man walks into a psychiatrist's office and says to the psychiatrist, says, "How can I help you?" And the man says, "Well, I'm a corpse. I'm dead." And the psychiatrist kind of laughs and says, "Well, look, you just walked in here. Do corpses walk?" And the man goes, "Duh, have you never seen The Walking Dead? Of course corpses can walk." "Fair enough. Okay." So the psychiatrist says, "Well, do corpses talk? I mean, in The Walking Dead, they don't." And the guy said, "Well, I'm talking and I'm a corpse. Ergo, corpses talk." "What kind of psychiatrist are you?" Psychiatrist, okay. He realizes he's going to need extraordinary measures. So he has a little letter opener, kind of a souvenir letter opener from back when people used to send each other letters, on his desk. And he just waits for his moment as he's continuing to talk to the guy. And at a certain moment, he just reaches over, and with the letter opener, he just grabs the guy's hand, pricks the tip of his finger, and says, the corpses bleed. And the guy says, well, no, corpses don't bleed. And then he removes the letter opener. And sure enough, a little bit of blood starts coming out from his finger, from where he was pricked with the opener. And the guy just looks at it, and he looks at the blood, and he looks at the psychiatrist, and he says, I'll be damned. Corpses do bleed. Well, I thought that was a really fun story about how we can get caught up in our thinking. And then one day, I had always considered myself what I called an almoster. So I broke the world up into three types of people. There were successes, people who were destined for success, failures, people who were destined for failure, and almosters, people who were destined to almost be successful, to almost win, to almost pull it off, to almost be rich. And I kind of, I thought I was an almoster with a tendency towards, you know, failure, loser. And I remember the day where we had our first million-dollar year in my company. And my first thought was, well, I'll be damned. Even a loser almoster like me can make $1 million in a year. Now, I caught it, though, right? I heard myself. I thought, oh, my God, I'm the corpse in the psychiatrist's office. I thought that success would cure me of thinking that I wasn't successful. I thought achievement would cure me of thinking I couldn't achieve anything. I thought money would cure me of feeling poor and hopeless. And it was one of my first insights into the fact that it's nothing to do with the world. Your experience of life has nothing to do with your circumstances. It is an entire inside-out creation of the mind. We live in an experience of thought. We live in a thought-created reality. Now, if we understand that, we can step back from it from time to time. And because the nature of thought is transient, a new thought-created reality will appear. It will be like reality transformed before our very eyes. But if we don't step back from it, if we don't see that, A, it's created by thought, and B, thought is an ever-changing energy, then we think we're stuck with what we see, and instead we try to get good at navigating it better. So we create a maze in our own mind and then put our energy into getting better at navigating the maze instead of working on our understanding, looking to see if we can understand how the mind works at a deeper level, and then starting to see, oh, this maze is just a creation of thought, and thought is transient. And if I can step back from this situation, if I can step back from what seems to me like a tragedy, like an insurmountable problem, like a really difficult relationship, the intelligence behind the mind will rethink it for me. It will make it up different. And when it doesn't look like a maze anymore, when it doesn't look like a monster, then I can just move forward. I can just carry on. In a way, the very thought that we have to figure out a way to solve a problem, we have to worry about this problem until we figure it out, is kind of just a natural fruit of the misunderstanding that problems are real, that they have a life of their own, that they exist outside of thought. Problems don't exist outside of thought. Situations do. Life does. There's a video, and I you can find the video of it, I think, if you go to if you go on my website on supercoach.com and search for taxes, I think you'll find this video. And if not, maybe you can type it into Google, Michael Neal Taxes. But there's a little video clip from an event that we did called Problem Solving from the Inside Out. And somebody asked the question, it's the question that often comes up when I talk about this. Well, what about taxes? I mean, taxes are real. You're not telling me taxes are just a thought. And on the flip chart, that I had at the front of the room, I write up the word taxes really big. Taxes! And I say, see, that's what we think taxes are. And because we think that's real, but we understand that our attitude matters, we try and put a smiley face on the A in taxes. We try and go, well, yes, I have taxes, but I there are good things in my life, and we try and make a list of the good things in our life, or try and be positive, or try and see the taxes as an opportunity. But we never question the reality of taxes. Now, when we have a change of heart, when our mind changes, when new thought comes in, we wake up in the morning and we may notice that there are still taxes to pay. And there are puppies, and there are beautiful people, and there's a wonderful life. See, our problem isn't taxes. Our problem is taxes! And last time I'm going to do it. Taxes only exist in thought. Taxes? Yeah. Everyone who works pays taxes. So, numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code, usually 001-760-918-4300. And let us go to California. Well, we don't have to go to California. I'm already in California. And let's talk with Natalie. Natalie, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael.
Hey.
I'm so glad to be talking to you. Just on the subject of stress and how the body reacts to it, recently I've just had a lot of emotional stress with work and also family stress. So I think I'm coming down with an ulcer. Because I'm getting pains in my stomach, and I hurt, and it's physicality wise, like it's hard for me to. I just know that I'm kind of overwhelmed and burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I've kind of I'm
so fix
steps
me.
Well, I've kind of taken step towards resting, relaxing, getting a massage, calling in sick, and that sort of thing. But in a bigger sense, what you were saying is that our reality is created by our mind. And I believe that in a real sense, but now my body is wearing out.
Right.
So no, that part I can't handle.
Absolutely. And understand, it sounds like you do understand. I'm mocking with you, not at you.
Yeah, no, I know.
So let's talk a little bit about this, because I think this applies to so many people. It was actually, I remember being in a doctor's office with my wife earlier this year, and we were about to, that night I was going to teach a program called Can We Really Live Without Stress? And talking about the inside out nature of stress. And an old friend of ours who we hadn't seen in years happened to be in the doctor's office when we were, and we were catching up, and hey, what are you up to? And he said, oh, I'm about to quit my job. Because the stress is just so bad, I can't do it anymore. And, and it was kind of, it was ironic and a little bit sad that I said to him, hey, you know, this couldn't have happened at a better time. Why don't you come down as my guest tonight and join us for the seminar? And unfortunately he was too stressed to come down. but here's the thing about stress. Okay. Let me talk about stress for a little bit, and you tell me if this sounds true.
Can you kind of fit in anger in there somewhere too?
Oh, I'll get anger in, Natalie. Believe me, I'll get anger in. Okay. So if you put your hand on something on like a hot stove, right? You feel the first thing is you feel the heat before your hand even gets there. But if feeling the heat doesn't stop you, then there's a bit of like a quick pain, and if the pain doesn't get you to move your hand, it starts to burn, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So because you missed the early signals, you don't pull your hand back until it's actually burning.
Exactly. Well, it's burning.
Right. So yeah. So that's like an ulcer from stress. It's, you know, the stress is letting you know, hey, this is hot. And when you don't pull back from the source of stress, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute, then the next thing to do is you start getting physical symptoms. And then if you don't pull back from that, then those physical symptoms become, you know, embodied, and you start to get things like, you know, you might be getting an ulcer at the moment. I got Bell's palsy at my most stressed, you know, people get all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing that I didn't understand that once I did, it changed my life. Okay.
Okay.
I thought that the source of stress was work, other people, the demands of the job, you know, what it took to succeed. And so it seemed to me my choice was hold my hand on the fire longer so that I could get stuff done, or pull it out and relieve myself from stress.
Mm-hmm.
So it really seemed to me like I was caught between two stools, and neither of them were very comfortable. Like, you know, I was between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. You're explaining completely my situation. Yeah.
Well, at some point, as I look to understand the mind and thought consciousness more, it became apparent to me that what stress is telling us is our thinking has gone amok.
Mm-hmm.
It's telling us, boy, you are overthinking things right now. You got too much going on in your head. The radio is turned up way too loud, and you're just out of touch with your inner self. Now,
yeah.
If you know that that's what the stress is telling you. So, okay, let's play a game. Okay. If you knew that heat was telling you, take your hand away from the fire, what would you do when you felt heat?
I would take my hand away from the fire immediately.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay, you win round one. Now round two. If you knew that stress came from your job and the people and the demands of the job, what would be the logical, rational, sane thing to do when you got too stressed?
I would definitely get away, but I
feel... I was about to ding, 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 ding you one, because you got the right answer to that question. All right?
Yeah, but
Stay with me. Uh-uh. No, this is a game show. You don't get to run this. Okay, third and final question, and then you can tell me whatever you want to tell me. All right?
Okay.
If you knew that the stress that you were feeling was coming from a revved up mind, from a busy mind, what would you do? What direction would you look to for relief from the stress?
I don't know.
Okay, so we're going to try it again. And I understand that you don't know. Okay, I believe you.
I mean,
So you would try things that you thought would help you quiet your mind.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. That's all I was looking for.
Yeah.
So now here's the really good news. Okay? And it comes in two parts. The first part is it really isn't your job or the demands of your job or anything outside of you. That's the first bit of good news. Because if it was, you'd kind of be screwed. Right? If it was something outside you that you didn't have any say in, then really your only choice would be to walk away, which probably there's a lot of reasons why you can't or don't want to do that, or
right.
just suffer.
Financial.
Right. So the good news is it isn't that at all. The second bit of good news is that our minds are designed to be quiet. In other words, it's like a pond. No matter how much the wind is blowing and the surface of the pond is being disturbed, as soon as the wind dies down, the pond returns to still. And the same's true in our minds. We don't have to do anything to quiet our minds because the nature of our minds is quiet. You don't have to do anything to settle the water on a pond because the nature of water is still. But what you do kind of, I guess, if you want to give yourself a job, the job is to begin to notice when you're revving yourself up.
Okay.
Because when you start to notice that you're revving yourself up, It's like if you suddenly noticed that, I use this analogy a lot, but if you felt a pain in your arm, and then you suddenly noticed that you kept pushing your arm up against a fork, and that was the source of the pain.
Yeah. You would remove your arm.
You'd remove your arm because you got that it was the fork that was causing you pain.
Yeah.
And when you start to really see, the only thing I'm suffering from is thinking run amok.
I don't
want you to kind of hear that and go, oh no, my mind is the enemy. I need to fight my mind. No,
yeah.
It's the thoughts that are going through your mind that are just going so fast.
Yeah.
And so furious. Like it's Fast and Furious 8 inside Natalie's head.
Yeah.
Right. Starring Vin Diesel. That is the only source of the stress. And in fact, the stress isn't a bad thing. The stress is telling you, beep, beep, beep. Head's going crazy. Beep, beep, beep. Too many thoughts. Beep, beep, beep. Slow it down. Beep, beep, beep. Right? That's all the stress is telling you. Wow, I need to settle down a little. And here's the third piece of good news. I promised you two. I'm delivering three. That's how much good news I have for you. Okay?
Yeah.
The third piece of good news is that you don't have to figure out how to quiet your mind. The intelligence of the mind, the deeper intelligence that lives all of us, the life energy itself, will guide you when you turn to it. So I don't know if you're religious, but if somebody who is religious would probably, the way they would do it is they would pray for peace. They would go, dear Lord, I don't know how, I don't know where, but could you shut me the hell up?
Yeah.
Right. Somebody who is less religious might simply just, when they started to feel stressed, just kind of take a step back and try and catch their breath and not look to the situation, because when you're stressed, you can't see the situation. You have no idea what your job is like. You only know what your job looks like when you're looking through stress goggles. And there's no job in the world that looks good through stress goggles.
Yeah.
So if you, and I hate to promise you this because it's going to sound like, yeah, like what am I going to do about it? I'm on the radio. But I will promise you that if you look away from the job and look to the quiet of your own mind, the stress will fade, because the stress is just telling you about the busyness of your mind. And when you are in a quieter mind, you'll look back at your job, and if there's a better way to do it, it will occur to you. If it's the wrong job, it'll occur to you. If there's a better thing for you to be doing or a better way for you to handle it, it will occur to you. But it will occur to you in a moment of quiet when you look again without the stress goggles on.
Got it.
Thanks for phoning in, Natalie.
Thank you very much. That was a gift to me. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I always sort of hope that people who are newer to the show get the reason that I can be so flip sometimes about things is because me too, right? We're all in it together. When my thinking gets going crazy, I stress too. But because I know that that's all it is, it doesn't last very long. It doesn't turn into an ulcer. It doesn't turn back into Bell's palsy. It's just, wow, I was really stressed. And then I'm fine. And it doesn't make you smarter being stressed. It doesn't give you insight into your situation. It just lets you know, wow, my mind is going a mile a minute, and it's designed to go a mile an hour. Let's go out to New York and let's talk to Chris. Chris, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today? Hey, Chris, you with us?
Hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. I'm you're just blowing my mind away, and I'm laughing, and thank you so much for today's message. And you answered my question along the way, and I've just been sitting here listening, and the word that's been coming to me in listening to your last caller is trust. And letting, because I had a question, which was my mind was spinning out, you know, a conflict in my head, and then just sitting here listening to the show and started looking out the window at the trees, and then felt myself start to relax a little bit, and then suddenly new things began to pop up, other possibilities which I couldn't see when I was preparing my question.
Yeah.
And which my question, I know this is the end of the show here, but you know, I was thinking about, you know, what is it that we each can do that makes, you know, a difference each day? You know, there's so many quote unquote problems out there that are being sort of projected into our collective consciousness, and where do you start? What do you do? How do you begin to, you know, try to solve the problems? And I realized that I didn't have an answer except to be quiet. That sounds totally contradictory.
Well, it doesn't sound contradictory to me at all. It sounds wise, and I'll tell you why. Because if you start to see that the space into which solutions come, the space into which fresh thinking comes, is a quiet mind, then you start to gain respect for that emptiness. Mm-hmm. And you start to lose respect for the busyness of mind that most of us walk around with. Now, if it looks to you like the solution to your problem is going to be in your memory and your thinking, then it makes sense that you're always in your head thinking. It's just that the solution to nobody's problem has ever been found in their thinking. It's found via thought, but it's found via fresh thought. It's found via new thought, which always comes into a quiet mind. Now, it might come into a quiet mind in the midst of a lot of other noise. I'm not suggesting you know, people only solve problems in a state of meditation. That's not true. But it always has a quality of meditation to it.
Yes, yes, I see that. And another question for another show is, where do those thoughts come from?
Oh, the Thought Factory. Yeah, it's on 5th and Columbus, and it's sort of an old building. I think it was, you know, in the 30s they used it as a sort of a factory for migrant workers, but there was a fire and now they just make thoughts there. I don't know, right? I mean, but that's the whole point, is we don't know where thought comes from, but we act like somehow we're in control of it, and we're supposed to think the right thoughts at the right time. It's like, fortunately for all of us, there is a deeper intelligence behind the mind, a deeper part of the mind that will provide the thinking needed for whatever it is we're attending to.
Yeah, exactly. That was the trust part that I realized. It's like, I don't know the answer, but I do know that if I get quiet enough, something will change. Something else will come. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Okay. Take care.
You're welcome. And you know, I'll just take it a step further as we come to the end of today's show. That's right back to where we started. That if you know that the mind is designed to work in a very binary fashion, you know what you know, you don't know what you don't know, but the intelligence behind the mind will bring you what you need to know when you need to know it. Then your job, you don't have a job when it comes to the mind part. You can just relax, and because when you need an answer, you'll have an answer, or you already have an answer. And when you don't have an answer, you know, there's no point in trying to make up an answer, because it's in that space of not knowing that the answer will come. So I hope you've enjoyed the show today. I have. I'm off to Glasgow. Hope to see some of you in Glasgow, some of you in London, some of you in LA next week. You can always find us online at supercoach.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/mneil, on Twitter at michael_neil. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.